You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome back. I'm Tanya Pinkins, and I'm talking with Peter Kim, star of Hackers, and the upcoming 40-year version.
Have you been to Korea?
I went back last summer for the first time in like 19 years. I had not been back in so long. And it is crazy. It is so different now. It's like we were in a few different places. But in Seoul, I was kind of shocked that like you can go anywhere and speak English and kind of everybody speaks English. That was not the case, you know, in 2000 when I was there.
Okay.
But it's a weird thing being Korean American going back to Korea. My Korean is not great.
Shame.
Yeah. No, really. And it was interesting because when I went to Korea last summer, that was the first time where I didn't feel that shame because I think everyone spoke English. And now, like the tourism is so
big
in Korea, and I think they're just more accustomed to Korean Americans, you know, that don't speak Korean great or whatever, and no one like blinked an eye about it.
Okay,
or also that maybe they thought I was Japanese, or you know, really.
Do people think you're Japanese?
I think I thought
you were Chinese because of Kim.
Oh yeah, no, Kim is actually a pretty common Korean last name.
Okay,
it's probably like 99% sure if someone's last name is Kim, they're Korean.
99 more than Chinese,
yeah.
Kim is a Korean name.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think like Lee
is Chinese.
Lee can be Chinese
more
or
Chinese
Korean. Yeah.
That you'd find it.
Especially
okay
they spell it L-I. That's okay definitely more Chinese than L-E-E.
Okay. L-E-E could be Korean,
or
could be
Chinese. Yeah.
Okay. I'm very scatological. Tell me about the Koreans and poop.
Koreans and poop.
Yes, there's a whole poop culture, poop stores, and poop food, and poop containers.
You tell me. I don't know about
really?
The poop culture.
You don't know about Korean poop?
Don't.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Oh my God.
Tell
there's
it
like stores in Korea where they like make everything in little poop containers.
What?
And there's like a there's a whole park where everything is in the shape of big turds.
You mean like the poop emoji?
Beyond the poop emoji, there's a park and there's restaurants and stuff.
No.
You really didn't know about this?
No, I...
Oh, my God. See,
I'm
going to mess up all the sound right now. Maybe Bea can pull it up because I'm on AirPlay.
Okay.
But, oh, so you don't know about
this.
I'm very into scatological things. And so that's another reason why the Koreans are very dear to my heart.
Oh, my God. That is crazy.
Yes, see? I'm introducing you to your own culture.
Yeah. Introduce me to the poops.
Look, Bea's showing you...
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a
poop
very big
themed thing. Coffee shop. No.
Yes.
I am not. Oh my God, that's a little toilet teacup.
Yes.
Nope.
It's a whole thing.
I'm not having that. I'm really uncomfortable with that. I'm a little bit embarrassed by my people. Yeah. Wait, I do want to talk about Parasite, though. Really
yeah, let's
quick,
go. Let's do it. No, let's talk about it.
That has been kind of like on social media that I actually think is really kind
tell
of,
us.
Which is so, you know, people are like, oh, Parasite, like, are you excited, you know, for Asian representation to increase because of the movie and stuff? And then, you know, Parasite is supposed to be made into an HBO series. And they're
with white people.
Yeah. And, you
yeah,
know, but
I'm
the
not
thing
feeling
is,
it.
But the thing is, and the thing is, people, like, I think I have all the praise in the world for Parasite and everything that's wonderful that's happening for it, but I don't think it's gonna necessarily help Asian Americans
mm-hmm.
In the biz. I mean, I think because you know, like he's making this remake of the movie with
oh, he's doing the American version?
Yeah. He and his main producer are Korean are behind it, you know? And so I think it's like, well,
get the money.
Yeah, or like for them, like Americans don't, they're not thinking about Korean Americans as Americans or
right
Asian Americans as Americans. They're thinking of people who don't look like them as Americans. And I'm not saying that's good or bad or whatever, but I'm just saying like that's not like being Korean is different than being Korean American. Being Asian is different than being Asian American. And so, you know, I, in a weird way, I feel like as an Asian American performer, like we're in this weird in between. Like we're not Asian enough to be in the Asian movies, and then we're not white, so we can't be in the mainstream stuff. Mm-hmm. And even with like, yeah. So I'm like, I'm happy for Parasite and
we
for Korean film and all that.
Of course.
But it's, I don't know. I don't think it's a direct translate.
Agreed. And I will say that one of my, my entree going deep into Korean filmmaking and storytelling was that I watched a series. I don't even remember what it was called. It was mm-hmm. so terrible, with Paula Patton. And, it was terrible. Mm. It was about a mother who was a producer on a television show, and she, her news was tracking a serial killer, and the serial killer gets her kid and kills it. And the kid was like the bad seed, and she was the saint mother. And I was like, did she, like, I went to look it up, and I was like, did she executive produce this piece of crap? Right. And when I looked it up, it turned out it was a South Korean series called, translation, God's Gift, 14 Days. A spectacular series. Mm. The child is the saint and the mother is a little irresponsible. And it was like, this woman was giving Oscar award winning performances. And so I can't see Parasite doing that, because Americans, we always sanitize everything and make everybody so nicey, smiley, have a nice day, good. I have no desire to see an American version of Parasite. It was perfect. Why would we want to try to do anything else with it?
Yeah, it was a masterpiece.
It was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Masterpiece.
Yeah.
Now, something else that we share that you might not even know we share.
Oh.
Is Thoroughly Modern Millie.
I did. Oh. I didn't know you did that show.
I did. I did it before it came to Broadway.
Crazy.
Yeah. And I heard you somewhere talking about, you know, the challenge for you of playing a Chinese person when you're a Korean person. And I was thinking a lot about that because, you know, we're actors. We want to be able to play anything. And certainly white actors get to play everything.
Sure.
And for me coming to New York, I was raised Catholic and we sing Latin. And I was always hired to sing gospel, which just for me was this sense of being inauthentic the whole early part of my career, where people were asking me to sing in a way that wasn't my culture.
I
don't riff, I don't run, and I just felt fake. And I knew 20 girls over there who were looking at me and rolling their eyes, like, what is she doing?
Right.
Talk a little bit about, you know, that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I think that particular situation is pretty specific. So I did Thoroughly Modern Millie. I booked it actually in my third year at grad school. And so
at Yale.
At Yale Drama. So I was really psyched to have the gig. And so like a week after I found out that I got it, they announced their closing. So I was like, oh, great. I'm going into this Broadway show and it's closing in like 3 months. Great. So, you know, I went in for it and I was comfortable going in for it. But now that time has passed and my experience of actually doing the show, I had a really hard time with the language. And it's not that I'm Korean and that the character's Chinese. It's that I don't speak the language. And I feel like the language, since that's they sing and speak in Cantonese and Mandarin.
Okay, so I did it before it came to Broadway.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it before it came to Broadway, so I didn't even go see it on Broadway.
Yeah.
So I didn't know they actually put the real language
in. They
because
did.
When I saw it, it was just this,
like,
it
gibberish.
Was very offensive to me.
Yeah. So they and they built that around the actors that they that originated the roles, like Francis Ju and Ken Leong. And so they built it around what they could speak, actually, if I'm recalling correctly. And so, you know, good for them that they got the original cast that could speak.
Right.
But when they got replacements, they ended up hiring two Korean Americans that did not speak the language. It's not that I'm Korean. If I was of Asian descent and I could speak Cantonese or Mandarin, then like no problemo. So I think I don't know why that wasn't the priority in terms of casting that part. And I guess Because ultimately when I was performing, I learned it all phonetically and it was really, really challenging for me. So when I was doing the show for tourists who I'm sure were from China and me basically doing the best I could, but really not being comprehensible.
It's a tonal language.
Yes.
So there's
so
five
it
ma
made
sounds,
me
you know?
Feel horrible actually. And so, you know, I know that they're doing a revival now, or they're bringing it back for, I think, at Encores or something.
Okay.
And I think they're trying to address, you know, a lot of the kind of, I guess, what people are considering racial insensitivities and stuff around multiple characters.
Right.
But I just hope that whoever they cast for Bun Fu and Ching Ho, if they are singing and speaking in Mandarin and Cantonese, that they have working knowledge of those languages.
Yeah.
And that was a personal thing for me. You know, I didn't have this awareness when I was auditioning for the job. And I, you know, so I guess hindsight is 2020.
Well, let's talk about this awareness. Like, I think a lot of young people today don't have a lot of awareness of a lot of historical things. So do we hold people responsible for doing things because they lack awareness, or do we go after them? I mean, I was looking at the protests of West Side Story.
About the
dancer. Young man
yeah.
who, you know, he has apologized publicly and mm-hmm. said, I made a mistake. I'm not that person anymore. And the person who he, you know, did something bad to has come out in his defense. So I'm like, who are all these other people
right.
to be defending somebody who's not asking to be defended?
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What is that?
I'll say for myself, I don't know, it's tricky, right?
It is tricky, and there's no right or
wrong.
I'm
a very different person now than I was 20 years
ago. We would hope so.
You know, and that, sure, I've done things in the past that maybe I'm not the most proud of. I don't know, maybe it's a generational thing, but I do believe, like, we have to forgive,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't forget, but
right.
we have to forgive, especially if that it's tricky because we want to make sure that whoever is apologizing is actually.
Well, considering that he's like in a relationship with the person that he offended, supposedly, I think that someone's forgiven.
Right.
You know, someone's right. forgiven them. But I feel like this American punitive culture that we have, you know, we forget that we're all better than the worst thing. We're more than the worst thing that we've ever done.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do we, I think culturally we need to find
yeah.
more forgiveness, genuine forgiveness, not, you know, Pat, this is the Bible forgiveness kind
right,
of thing.
Right. I think, you know, I just want to jump back to Thoroughly Modern
yep.
Millie. You know, the thing is, fundamentally, like, people within the Asian American theater community were upset at me.
They were.
For doing that part because Ooh. They found the part offensive and, you know, stereotypical.
At the time while you were doing it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had seen the show before auditioning for it, and I was like, ooh, they're walking this really fine line, but they were succeeding, in my opinion.
Okay.
And so I felt comfortable going in for something like that. And I think, you know, in hindsight, the language barrier was the thing that ultimately I have regrets about, but it's not for going in for the role, even though people would disagree
like
with.
Like, what did they say to you about it? Like, what was the
well, that just that people think like the roles are stereotypical, that they, you know, it's offensive because like the characters speak Chinese and they're, you know, they work in a laundry, blah, blah, blah.
Which is a historical kind
yeah, of. You know, and, you know, believe, yes. Do we want other depictions of people of Asian descent that is not of the foreigner, that
right.
is not of working in a laundromat? But I found that overall in the piece that they came out ahead. They both win at
mm-hmm.
the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were both smarter, and the guy gets, one of them gets the girl.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, like, you know, wins,
mm-hmm.
you know, he fools Mrs. Mears. So I guess that's to say, to go back to the kind of a cancel culture that we exist
right.
in, that, you know, things are not so like black or white.
Yeah.
Things are way more nuanced than mm-hmm. people want to admit, that people want to spend the time thinking about.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy just to make a decision about someone or something they said or did, but like, it is complicated. There's so much more than what you just hear or read about in like a blip.
And in deep fake culture, we can't even know that it's you saying it. Right. I've been seeing all these things where people are taking people's headshots and animating the eyes and the mouths.
What?
You haven't been seeing that on Instagram? Okay, well, my Instagram, I was looking at Rosa Parks' head, police head thing where it's animated and her talking and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Keanu Reeves and Denzel Washington, people who are animating their headshots. And it's creepy to me as fuck. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, I guess deepfake has become an app now. And so anybody can do it to anybody.
So then you can just have them saying whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. You could be speaking through their voice, or you can put any kind of voice you want on a headshot. So you're just taking a headshot and animating it.
That is frightening.
Yeah. We're there. Like, I mean, I knew deepfake was being used to take celebrities and politicians and use them on porn, but now it's just like on my Instagram feed.
It's crazy. And something else that I just wanted to chat about was, you know, like I was saying, 5 years ago or so, like I kind of had this shift in my career and also my personal life and everything. And I don't know, not to be all like woo-woo about it, but I do believe that we bring certain projects into our lives for a certain reason. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're meant to work on it for our own personal
growth. Some predestination.
Growth. Yeah, yeah. And so I just want to talk about this movie that...
Well, we were not... Yeah. Do you think... You know, that was how it was going to wrap it up. We were the second woman ever to win Best Director at Sundance.
I know.
So tell us about the 40-year-old version, Rada Blank's writing, directing debut. Who are you in this movie?
So I play Archie Choi. He is Rada, the character. Rada plays a version of Rada. He is her childhood best friend, who is also her agent. So kind of a complicated relationship. Okay. But the movie is...
Her agent before she becomes a rapper?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the movie is about a struggling New York playwright who decides to become a rapper at 40. It's actually a love letter to New York and to New York theater, actually, as much as it kind of like, you know, makes some digs, you know.
You got to make digs. That's where the humor is.
It's holding a mirror to the community, if you will.
Okay.
But it is ultimately a love letter to New York, to theater, and to hip hop.
Now, you shot it on film in black and white. Tell us about how that changed the process, because everything's on Alexas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was challenging because you can only get so much of a take in it before you have to like reload and stuff.
Right.
And it takes a while. Not a while, but it does. It takes some time to like reload and like it was interesting. It was kind of like theater in a way. Like and Rada likes to do long shots. She doesn't like to do coverage, and she likes to get it all in.
She's
like,
shooting it in proscenium a wide.
Yes,
and you all are. She's blocked the action.
Right. And the camera there's like a handheld quality to it, so it's like following you.
So it's like Steadicam.
Yeah. So you kind of, when you were doing a take, and you know you wanted to get it like on that take, like you kind of had to be on your A game and ready to do the whole thing, which was really fun. Cause then, you know, like as a theater actor, like that feels great. Cause sometimes when you're working, like, especially in television, I think, it feels so choppy, you know, you're like, okay, great. We got the wide shot. Now we're going medium. Now we're going to do close-ups. Mm-hmm. And then, so that pacing is very different.
Right.
But it was good to know. Cause like on my first day of shooting, I was like, we're doing the shot. And I was like, oh, we're not doing any coverage. Cause I was like, what are we doing coverage? She's like, no, I don't like coverage. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I was like, great. Okay. So that means like, we're just taking these long shots and we can overlap and we can, you know, all of that. So you know, so there was like a freedom there that sometimes you feel like you don't get when you're in television.
But wait a minute, she's directing and she's in these long shots. How does she do that?
Well, she would frame up the shot.
Okay. Frame up the whole long blocked out shot that's going to last for 5 minutes.
Yep. She would frame it out and then...
With a stand-in being her?
Yes, she did have a stand-in, Tracy. And then they had this thing. It's really cool. So even though they're shooting on film, there's a way to like get playback.
Yeah, on a digital monitor.
Yes. Okay. I don't know what it's called, but yeah. They were able to do that. So she would frame it up, see it, and then, you know, watch playback. And then she would step in, do the take.
Okay.
And then watch playback.
Okay.
And then we would move on.
That had to move it a lot slower, though, if she's having to watch playback every
definitely,
time, too.
Definitely. But as the shoot went on, and like that dialogue between the DP, her and her first AD, once that kind of like everyone found the rhythm, they understood what the vocabulary was, there was less of that. Like then it was just about her checking, making sure the frame was
right.
What she wanted. And then we would just shoot.
How many weeks was your shoot?
We shot the whole thing in 21 days.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And in New York, which is not easy to shoot in New York.
Nice.
It is hard. And it's a really funny movie with so much heart.
Was this your first time at Sundance?
It was.
How was that?
It was intense.
Yeah.
I was told it was going to be a whirlwind, and it certainly was. I will say, like,
it's the whitest place ever.
It's the whitest place. It is very white. I remember talking to Michael. My husband was with me. He's also a white guy. He was there, and I was like, it is so white here. Holy smokes. You definitely feel
you stick out,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, public transportation is free because it's only them here. It's like that Saturday Night Live thing where they're on the bus and when the black guy gets on, everybody gets serious. And as soon as he leaves, they're serving champagne and stuff like that.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's great. I was like, that was made on
that. That is hilarious. I mean, I will say it was great because I was like flown out and put up and all that because, y'all, it is expensive to go there. I was looking, before I knew I was being put up, I was looking at hotels, $800 a night.
Yes.
That is not okay.
An elite group of people.
That is really not okay.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I was brought out there. It's crazy. It was super fun. I was really grateful that I was with like a movie that I was really proud of and that I had such a big part in, but I can imagine it would be a really tricky place to navigate as an actor if you don't have a project in the festival, or if you, I don't know, I just kept on thinking like, because I've been on that other side where like, was it FOMO?
What's FOMO?
A fear of missing out. Where there's a lot of FOMO where you're like, oh, that person's going to that party and I wasn't invited. Or, oh, they're getting their photo taken, but they don't want my photo taken.
Oh.
So like, it's just, you can't help but, like, that's the way the machine is built.
Oh.
So, I mean, I luckily was like, you know, asked
to
do a lot of this stuff. But I've been to premieres where I've not been asked to be photographed and all that stuff.
I didn't know it had a name. I mean, I'm just like, that's just life. You're not the hot one on this thing. For me there, like I was there with a film and the films were, they didn't have the money for $800 a night. So it was like they rented a house and like 20 of us stayed in a house together.
Yep.
And I got a friend of mine was head of Grey Goose. And so I got to be on the list for the Grey Goose parties, all of them. And the first one I went to, it was the most horrible experience. I took the stars of the film with me.
Mm-hmm.
People just all night long kept saying, the urban party is over there. The urban film. And it was like, we're not there. And, well, who are you know? And why are you here? And it was horrible. And I just was like, never again. I don't ever need to go back to this place again.
That is not good.
So I found the Black House. Did you get to the Black House?
I did.
You were there? The
Black
House
yeah,
was
yeah.
like the safe zone.
it has been for many years now, right?
Yeah, the Black House at Sundance.
One of our producers is, I don't know if she's a, she's part of Black House and organized.
Who was that?
Anouka Bakoti.
Okay.
She was one of the producers on the movie who, she's a Black woman, great. And you know, so yeah, she was like, yeah, Black House, like that's where you go, that's like,
yeah, that's the spot. And now I guess here I hear Macro is
another
the next place to hang out.
Yep.
New though.
Yes. And you know, there was like the annual I think it's the annual Outfest brunch.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Which is
FOMO'd there.
This is the first. I think this was the first year where they actually like were in this new bigger space.
Okay.
So that was also traditionally a safe haven for the LGBTQ community.
Okay.
That, when they go to Sundance, and then also with the Asian American filmmakers and actors, there was an Asian American panel and group, which apparently I couldn't get in because it was so sold out. It was like so packed. I couldn't get in. Yeah.
Like some special cred to get in the Asian American thing.
I know. I was
now
like,
that's
wait
some
a second.
FOMO right there.
But I was like thrilled that I couldn't get in because I was like, great. That means there's just so many people here, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like it is slowly changing but I will say, like, I was thrilled for Radha because she did win the best directing award for a narrative feature
and a Netflix deal, and it's kind of
a Netflix deal,
and let's hope you get many more jobs,
you know, from your mouth to God's ears.
Yes.
But the movie's coming out, we don't know when it's being released. I think in the fall sometime.
Yeah, that's what I read.
Yeah. And you know, it's so funny because Radha and I believe in, like, you have to find the people who, you have to find your people, mm-hmm. right? And when I tell, like, a lot of young actors that are trying to, like, build their careers and stuff, I'm like, I believe in the 80-20 rule. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I do. The Pareto principle.
Yeah. So I'm like, you have to invest in the people that get you and the people who believe in you. And part of it is finding those people, because mm-hmm. that takes a while. And then, you know, 80% of the opportunities that you get will come from that 20 that you invest
right,
in.
Right, that 20% of your efforts give you 80% of your results.
Yes. And so Radha, I think, is a great example, because I first met Radha like 10 years ago. I was brought on to do dialect work for one of her plays.
Okay.
I don't even do dialect work. I don't know how I got involved, but I was brought in. And then a few years later, she asked me back to do dialect work again for her solo show, and we hit it off. We just always had a great like camaraderie, and she trusts my opinion about mm-hmm. things, not just like dialect wise, but just also like dramaturgy wise and stuff. And then this movie was supposed to be a web series. So 6 years ago, Radha was like, hey, I'm going to make this web series. There's a part that I'm thinking about you. Oh. Would you want to be in? I'm like, yeah. And then that fell apart because her mom passed away 2 weeks before we were supposed to shoot it. And then 2 years ago, Radha reached out to me and was like, hey, remember that web series? Well, I made it into a feature. Oh. And now it got into the Sundance Filmmakers Lab. Do you want to go out there with me to shoot a few scenes and work on it? I'm like, hell yes. And so we hit it off, you know, there. We had such a great time. And then we got to make it last summer.
And how lovely that you got to stay with the project. Well, that it didn't go.
And let's be honest here, right? Because I can say whatever.
Yeah.
So at Sundance, my last day on Sundance, I pulled Radha aside and I said, listen, I love this movie. I love this part, but I totally get it if you have to recast with a name. Because I know how it works. Like, yeah, you need John Cho in the part to get the movie made or whatever.
Right.
And she said, even then, she was like, nope, there's no one else. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, people say that shit.
Yes.
And they don't,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
Then all of a sudden John Cho's doing it. So, you know, really, I mean, let's be honest here.
That's right? Real. That is so,
so
real.
So once, you know, but Radha was always in my corner 100%. And then, you know, we, even when the movie was being passed around to different producers, trying to get them financing. And finally, when we got the financing and I got the offer, that was it, you know? And talk about people, you know, like, talk about people who are in your corner, you know, like, I would never have had this opportunity if it wasn't for her, like, believing in me, believing in what we were like together and all of that stuff. So it's a real, this movie is really, this experience is really special to me for that reason too, because as we know in this industry, it's not a meritocracy. They're all so talented. There's so many talented people.
So many. You could just throw a stone and hit some talented
especially
people.
In New York, you know? Like, so it's not even about that. And that is the most heartbreaking thing about this business. Or one of the most things. It is life.
It's life. So we're going to wrap up with three questions that come from one of your alums, from Ann Hamburger, who also went to Yale.
Okay.
And I love these questions. And so I'm going to ask you. She says she asks herself these questions, you know, at various points of her life as she's trying to figure out what's next. So I'm asking them to you. I'm going to say all three.
Okay.
And then you can answer them one at a time. Who are you? What is needed? And how can you serve?
Who am I? I am a Korean American man who is gay, who loves what he does and has so much more to learn.
What is needed?
What is needed? Kindness, 1,000%. Kindness and generosity of spirit. It doesn't cost you anything. And the last.
How can you serve?
How can you serve?
You serve.
Meaning.
How can I serve? How can you serve? How can I serve? How can I serve?
Yes. How can I serve? I can serve by example.
Give us an example.
I am a product of mentorship. I've had incredible mentors throughout my life and in my career, and I would not be who I am or where I am without them. And so I believe you must mentor. If someone asks you to meet for coffee, you meet them and you buy them their coffee. We have to. That's the only way.
Pay it forward. Pull somebody through the door when it's open for you.
Yep. I think a great example is Lena Waithe.
She is doing it.
And she is a producer on Radha's movie.
Yeah.
And she literally made the movie happen.
Yeah.
She literally said to Radha, Radha, will you help? Let me help you make this movie.
Yeah.
And she did it.
Yeah.
So pay it forward.
Thank you, Peter Kim.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you for coming and talking to me. I'm Tanya Pinkins, and that was my guest, Peter Kim, on You Can't Say That. How come you don't say no when you
need no? Thanks for listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can. I'm Tanya Pinkins, and You Can't Say That is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals, edited by Derek Gunther, with music by Kat Dale. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast highly wherever you stream. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Tanya Pinkins. And to learn more, visit bpn.fm/YCST. Stay safe.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.